on VOA1.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, Mario Ritter Jr. and Katie Weaver have a special report about Memorial Day. Later, Ana Mateo presents this week's science report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here are Mario and Katie.
Memorial Day is a national holiday observed in the United States on the last Monday in May. This year, Memorial Day falls on May 29th. It is a day when Americans honor the men and women who have died fighting in America's wars. For most Americans, it also marks the unofficial start of summer. It is a popular weekend for vacationing.
Memorial Day traditions include the observance at Arlington National Cemetery. It is the most famous burial place in America. The tradition began on May 30, 1868, when flowers were placed on the graves of Union and Confederate soldiers in the cemetery. It was called Decoration Day back then. Since 1948, on the Thursday before Memorial Day, soldiers from the 3rd U.S. Infantry, the Old Guard, have placed small American flags in front of every headstone in the cemetery. Lines of simple white headstones mark the soldiers' graves. But the 80-hectare cemetery also serves as a burial place for people of national and historical importance. Two presidents are buried there, William Howard Taft and John F. Kennedy. Other well-known people buried at the cemetery include world champion boxer Joe Louis, North Pole explorer Robert E. Peary, and the seven astronauts who died in the Space Shuttle Challenger explosion. Nearly 4,000 former slaves are also buried at Arlington National Cemetery. One of them is James Parks. He dug the first graves in the cemetery.
The best-known memorial in the nation's capital, however, is the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, which opened in 1982. In 1980, a group of former soldiers announced a competition to design a memorial. The winner was Maya Lin, a 21-year-old student at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. Lynn designed a memorial formed by two walls of black stone about 76 meters long. The walls meet to form a V. The names of more than 58,000 Americans killed or declared missing in action are cut into the stone. Almost any time of day, you can see people looking for the name of a family member or friend who died in the war. Once they find the name, many rub a pencil on paper over the letters to copy it. Many people leave remembrances at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. After the success of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, Congress approved a memorial to the Korean War veterans, which opened in July of 1995. The Korean War lasted from 1950 to 1953. The memorial honors those who died. It also honors those who survived.
One of the lesser-known memorials on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., is often called the Temple. The round stone structure honors people from the District of Columbia who died in World War I. The war was fought from 1914 to 1918. Between the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Monument on the National Mall is the World War II Memorial. The U.S. entered the war after Japan bombed the Navy base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, on December 7, 1941. 16 million men and women served in the American military between 1941 and 1945. More than 400,000 died. The World War II Memorial is built of bronze and granite. In the center, at ground level, is a round pool of water. When the sun is just right, rainbows of color dance in the air. 56 stone pillars rise around the pool. They represent each of the American states and territories, plus the District of Columbia, at the time of the war. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
If you love to watch birds, you can call yourself a bird watcher. Or you can call yourself something even more interesting, a dinosaur watcher. A new picture book called When Dinosaurs Conquered the Skies, The Incredible Story of Bird Evolution, explains the scientific idea that birds are dinosaurs. The writer, Jingmei O'Connor, describes herself on Instagram as a dead bird nerd. With her PhD, she works at the Chicago Field Museum as an expert on the evolution of birds and flying dinosaurs. O'Connor says people may know that birds are little dinosaurs, but they might not connect that fact to the birds they see.
Now people are more and more aware of the fact that birds are living dinosaurs. But despite that, people don't really make the connection.
One purpose of her book, she said, is to make that connection. O'Connor also wants people to see birds as she does, as fascinating flying dinosaurs.
So I really hope that people will really truly start to see birds as little dinosaurs and become more fascinated with birds by understanding that they are part of this, you know, fascinating ancient lineage.
With its clear explanations and colorful pictures by Maria Brzezowska, When Dinosaurs Conquered the Skies can help anyone of any age understand this complex bird evolution.
When people think of dinosaurs, they think of Triceratops, Stegosaurus, or, you know, Apatosaurus. And if you think about those dinosaurs, they're not particularly bird-like, right?
O'Connor explains that everyone knows common characteristics of birds. For example, birds have feathers. They use their own body heat to warm their eggs. Birds often lay colored eggs. O'Connor said these bird characteristics evolved from dinosaurs most closely related to them. She added that you need to look at the evolution of one lineage of dinosaurs, theropods.
So you really have to look at the evolution of one lineage of dinosaurs. That is the theropod lineage. So that includes Velociraptor or T-Rex. And as you look at the evolution of this group, you'll see the appearance of bird characteristics until you eventually reach a point where you're like, that dinosaur is now a bird.
In her book, O'Connor also talks about the larger idea of science, namely the importance of making mistakes. Each mistake, she said, leads us closer to the truth.
Science is essentially a series of mistakes. And every mistake, you know, informs us a little bit more and gives us a little bit more information. But pretty much everything that we think is truth right now is probably at least partly wrong. You know, there's so much we don't know, but mistakes are part of the process.
O'Connor is a Chinese-Irish American who grew up in Pasadena, California. She did not always want to study the remains of ancient living things. She began studying geology, like her mother.
But in my case, my mother went back to school to do her PhD when I was around 10 years old. And so she had four kids. So she would take us with her to the laboratory, but also into the field, which means going out to collect samples or specimens. So I fell in love with geology.
Then in college, O'Connor took a class and discovered a different but related field of study. The class was paleontology, the study of the bones and remains of ancient living things. Her teacher was a paleontologist.
But then my first year in college, I took a class by a paleontologist named Dr. Donald Prothero, and he was such a wonderful teacher that I got hooked.
In fact, O'Connor said she did not always like birds. But with further study, she started to feel differently.
And then I started studying birds, and I really found out that they're such fascinating animals. They're reptiles, but they have evolved to be so different from what we think of as a reptile that actually even scientists didn't realize they were reptiles until fairly recently.
However, O'Connor had a larger goal in mind when she wrote her book. She said she hopes to leave the reader with a desire to create a more sustainable lifestyle, one that is good for the environment.
Through having greater respect for the living animals around us, I hope that people start to think more about how they impact the environment through their actions so that we can all move towards a more sustainable future.
I'm Anna Mateo.
Anna Mateo joins me now to talk more about this week's science report. Hi, Anna. Thanks for being here. And thank you for that interesting story.
Thanks for having me, Ashley. Jingmei O'Connor's new picture book is really fascinating. It describes in such colorful detail how birds are little dinosaurs. Fascinating. And that is a word O'Connor used throughout our interview.
Some people may not realize that birds and dinosaurs have such a close connection.
That is what she said as well. Many people simply do not know that the birds they see today come from a specific line of dinosaurs, theropods.
Besides feeling passionate or very strongly about bird evolution, O'Connor also feels strongly about something else. Can you tell us?
Absolutely. The environment, with a capital E. She said she hopes that if people learn more about birds and other animals, they might change their lifestyle habits and think more about how their choices affect the environment.
Well, thanks for answering my questions today, Anna, and thanks for being here.
Thanks, Ashley. Take care.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. We begin the story of President Lyndon Johnson.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Lyndon Baines Johnson became America's 36th president suddenly.
Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th president of the United States.
On November 22, 1963, President John F. Kennedy was murdered. Kennedy and Johnson, his vice president, were in Dallas, Texas. Kennedy was shot as his open car drove through the city. Within a few hours, Johnson was sworn into office. The swearing-in took place on the presidential plane, Air Force One, at Dallas's Love Field. The plane returned to Andrews Air Force Base near Washington, carrying the new president and the body of the former president. At Andrews, President Johnson read a brief statement. He ended with these words, "I will do my best. That is all I can do. I ask for your help and God's." Before he was vice president, LBJ had served for many years in the Senate and the House of Representatives. He grew up in small towns in Texas. He finished high school at age 15. He traveled and worked for a few years before he entered Southwest Texas State Teachers College. There, he was a student leader and a political activist. In 1931, a newly elected congressman asked Johnson to work for him as his secretary in Washington. 4 years later, President Franklin Roosevelt appointed Johnson as Texas Director of Roosevelt's National Youth Administration. 2 years after that, in 1937, Johnson won a special election for a seat in the House of Representatives. He served in the House for 12 years. When the United States entered World War II, Johnson was the first member of Congress at that time to volunteer for active duty. After the war, he ran for the Senate, where he also served for 12 years. Johnson loved politics and became an expert in the operations of government. He would need all of that knowledge as president of a nation facing problems near and far. When Johnson took office, communist forces were fighting South Vietnamese troops supported by the United States. Also, there were continuing worries about nuclear war with the Soviet Union. At home, there was racial conflict. Many Americans were out of work, and there was the threat of a railroad strike. Johnson began his presidency by working hard for legislation that President Kennedy had proposed. Johnson had voted against civil rights legislation when he served in the Senate, but now he urged Congress to support the idea, and Congress agreed. The 1964 Civil Rights Act barred discrimination against minorities in jobs and in restaurants and other businesses.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment. We believe that all men have certain unalienable rights, yet many Americans do not enjoy those rights. We believe that all men are entitled to the blessings of liberty, yet millions are being deprived of those blessings, not because of their own failures, but because of the color of their skin.
The president said that such a situation could not continue in America. To treat people unfairly because of their race, he said, violated the Constitution and the idea of democracy. Lyndon Johnson succeeded in getting Congress to pass more civil rights legislation in 1965 and 68.
Many of the issues of civil rights are very complex and most difficult. But about this, there can and should be no argument. Every American citizen must have an equal right to vote. There is no reason which can excuse the denial of that right. There is no duty which weighs more heavily on us than the duty we have to ensure that right.
Many southern states used so-called literacy tests as a way to deny blacks the right to vote.
The Negro citizen may go to register only to be told that the day is wrong, or the hour is late, or the official in charge is absent. And if he persists, and if he manages to present himself to the registrar, he may be disqualified because he did not spell out his middle name, or because he abbreviated a word on the application. And if he manages to fill out an application, he is given a test. The registrar is the sole judge of whether he passes this test. He may be asked to recite the entire Constitution or explain the most complex provisions of state law. And even a college degree cannot be used to prove that he can read and write.
The Civil Rights Act of 1965 said states could not prevent citizens from voting just because they could not read very well. The 1968 law barred discrimination against blacks in housing. Johnson was from the South. That and his ability to persuade people helped him get Southern conservatives in Congress to support the civil rights legislation. He also had other ideas for a better America. He called his plan the Great Society. He talked about it in a speech at the University of Michigan.
The Great Society rests on abundance and liberty for all. It demands an end to poverty and racial injustice, to which we're totally committed in our time. But that is just the beginning. The Great Society is a place where every child can find knowledge to enrich his mind and to enlarge his talents.
Johnson launched the War on Poverty, a series of bills designed to help the poor. But his efforts to pay for social programs and a war overseas led to inflation. Vietnam was not the only place where Johnson used military force. In 1965, he sent more than 20,000 troops to intervene in the Dominican Republic. He worried that a revolution could lead to a communist takeover of that Caribbean nation. Lyndon Johnson served the last 14 months of President Kennedy's term. Then, in 1964, he ran for a full term. The Democratic Party strongly supported him and accepted his choice of Hubert Humphrey for vice president. Humphrey was a liberal senator from the state of Minnesota. Unlike the Democrats, the Republicans had a difficult time choosing their presidential candidate. Delegates at the party's nominating convention finally chose Barry Goldwater. Goldwater was a strongly conservative senator from Arizona.
Certainly, simple honesty is not too much to demand of men in government. And let our republicanism so focused and so dedicated not be made fuzzy and futile by unthinking and stupid labels. I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
The Republican candidate for vice president was William Miller, a congressman from New York State. Americans voted in November of 1964. Lyndon Johnson won more than 60% of the popular vote. Still, he had hoped for an even bigger victory. He wanted proof that Americans were voting for him and not the shadow of John Kennedy. In his inaugural speech, Johnson said his great society would never be finished. It would keep growing and improving.
I do not believe that the great society is the ordered, changeless, and sterile battalion of the ants. It is the excitement of becoming, always becoming, trying, probing, falling, resting, and trying again, but always trying and always gaining.
In 1965, he won congressional approval of Medicare, a health insurance program for Americans age 65 and older. President Harry Truman had called for such a plan 20 years earlier. Johnson presented Truman and his wife Bess with Medicare cards numbers 1 and 2. Under Johnson, Congress also approved Medicaid, a health care program for the poor and disabled. In 1967, President Johnson appointed the nation's first black justice to the Supreme Court, Thurgood Marshall. Around the country, President Johnson faced growing opposition to the war in Vietnam. More and more American troops were dying. Lyndon Johnson may have wanted to be remembered as a great president, but the war came to redefine his presidency.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
and I'm Dan Novak.